go get the council, I bet you they're snacking.
They're eating candy.
Is that all the leftover Halloween candy?
Yeah. George, I just found out the Kwanians have a change in some of the people they got here.
Okay.
So I've crossed off Sharon. She's not here. But they do have Jimmy Quinones, the current president.
Okay.
Ned Thompson, Brent Wingett, Larry Putnam, and Joe DiDomenico, all past presidents.
Okay.
And it was under the terms that this all got started. And so you can just call up
Jimmy
Quinones and the members, and they'll take it from there.
Okay.
And then I have that big check, and they'll come up, and just like with the Rotary, stand in front of you here. And
okay. Sounds good.
Mayor, we think you're watching that.
No, that's 5 minutes. Where's Jerry?
He went out in the back. You see him coming.
Yeah.
When we do the quarter signs,
Jerry and I are going to jump on the check.
Okay. So we'll give you a few seconds to do that. Kurt, is Councilmember Clay back there?
Jim, did Jerry come that way?
Okay.
Oh, here he is. We're okay.
Yes.
Yes. We appreciate it. Marcia.
Yeah. Can't you clarify anything?
So welcome to this November 13th meeting of the Atascadero City Council. We apologize for starting late, but we had an important redevelopment agency meeting that carried over, and we had to deal with a very important issue. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Bayrou.
Here.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Here.
And Mayor Luna.
Here.
All present.
As you know, you see at the dais our new city attorney, Brian Perlick, and he is a representative from the firm of Burke, Williams, and Sorensen, and he's our new city attorney. So give him a Atascadero welcome. And while I'm at it, I'd also like to thank Pat Enright for his 2 years of service to the city of Atascadero, as well as former city attorney Roy Hanley, Dave Fleischman, and Rob Schultz, the city attorney for Morro Bay, who were our interim city attorney while we were hiring Brian Perlick. Need a motion to approve the agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
Got a motion by Councilmember O'Malley, a second by Councilmember Clay to approve the agenda. Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0. Motion passes.
The next item is the a check that's going to be presented by the Kiwanis Club of Atascadero for the new Colony Park. Why don't you come over here, Jimmy?
We might as well stand there.
So I get the tall guy.
That's good. And that's in the amount of?
20,000 plus.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just go to the microphone. You didn't beat the.
Good.
I'll be the spokesman.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead.
At the time we made this pledge for the youth center, it was very disconcerting to a lot of our members, being primarily an organization that did hands-on type of service. Our financial condition at that time was tenuous, to say the least. However, a few brave folks came forward and made the reason that our key objective is the youth and that we should make this particular donation. And fortunately, through the hard work of the organization, we were able to pay off our pledge in 2 years. We had anticipating paying it off in 10 years because of the financial situations we were in. Again, we're very proud and of being able to donate this money to an important project of our city. Thank you.
And who might you be?
What's that?
And who might you be?
Oh, I'm Joe DiDomenico. Domenico? DiDomenico, thank you.
DiDomenico. Yeah, I might add one of the nicest men in the Tescadero.
All right. And thank you very much to the Kiwanis. Next item is City Manager Wade McKinney on Employee Service Awards.
Mr. Mayor and Council, I'm excited again to be introduced. Is the administrative assistant in the fire department and was previously with the community services department. Ellen's been with us for 10 years. We're having a whole group of 10-year folks. And Dave Payton. Dave's a fire engineer coming down the stairs. And Dave's been with us with the department since 1981 as a reserve firefighter. He became a full-time firefighter in 1987. And he's a grandpa for the first time.
Congratulations, guy. I appreciate it.
I take it that's it. So we'll move on to the consent calendar. There are 9 items on the consent calendar. Does anyone on the council want to pull an item? Seeing none, I'll ask the same of the public. Anyone want to pull an item?
My name is David Broadwater. What? I'd like items 3 and 4.
Okay.
Please.
Anybody else? Okay, I'll close it and bring it back to the council and ask for a motion on items 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion to approve the consent calendar items 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Mr. Broadwater, item number 3.
Yeah, David Broadwater here. Thank you. I could address both 3 and 4 together,
okay,
but if you want
go
me to
ahead.
Go one at a time, that's
do them
cool
both
too.
At the same time.
Okay. I want to direct your attention to the disbursement listing that you have in your agenda packet, and I have some questions and would like some explanations on some of the money that's being dispersed here. There's in the July packet, there are 2 checks.
Can you give us a page number?
Don't have the page number, but I can give you the date, July 6th and July 20th. The copy I have doesn't have page numbers, but it's to Mathis and Associates. All these are about Mathis and Associates. There's a check of $8,800 for a total in the month of August of $12,964.90. Which brings the disbursements to Mathis and Associates for the months of July and August to a total of $28,673.50. And for these 4 checks that I've identified here, I would like an explanation, since having looked at the agenda packet in this list, of what these payments are for, what services are provided, and exactly what it is that we're paying the Mathis and Associates for in these checks, in these four checks, please?
There were two things I think that they referred to. One is strategic planning that we do.
Which one would that have been?
The one in August. Was it?
I believe it would be the first one in July, and the second, and then the second two. There's probably two there that would be that meeting you're talking about, strategic planning, and probably two that are the city attorney recruitment.
City attorney recruitment was the other issue.
I'm unclear on to which are which. There are four checks here. But what I would like an explanation. You just used the only explanation I've received so far is two words, strategic planning. And I would like to know what services he provides. And,
well, I think,
and what that means.
I think at least you were at one of the strategic planning sessions we had.
That's correct.
So you're familiar with what that was about. The other is the city attorney recruitment. And last Thursday when we interviewed city attorneys, that was closed session. So I'm not sure as to which specific checks are for which items, but the total is for those two. Those two services?
Okay, so there's no way that you can tell me now which...
Well, I'd have to go to...
One of these four you're saying is for the attorney recruitment and the other three are for strategic planning.
I tell you what, the best thing to do is if you consult with Rochelle and she can give you the specifics of which check is for which service.
Well, since this is the public's taxpayers' money, I think that the public should get an explanation of what we're getting for this amount of money, too. Thank you. I see Rochelle is here,
Rochelle,
too.
Rochelle, did you?
And I have appreciated. I just wanted to say I've been inquiring into city disbursements and making a request for this, and her department's been very cooperative in providing the disbursement listings so that I can examine the expenditures, and I appreciate it.
I would suggest, why don't we just pulled copies and included in the record. That way anyone can see it in the minutes in the future if anyone else is curious. Would that be?
Yeah, I think it's probably
I don't see any need for an immediate, but if there could be some public accounting, I'd
okay.
Think that would
Rochelle, if you would do that, print out a copy, and Marcia, if you'd include that in the minutes, we'd appreciate it. And Mayor Pro Tem Brendler has a question.
Can I be copied those as well? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank
and
you, Mr.
Thank
Lerner.
You, Rochelle.
Move approval of consent calendar items 3 and 4.
Got a motion to approve items
second.
3 and 4 in the consent calendar by Councilmember O'Malley, second by Councilmember Clay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
And Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Next item on the agenda is public hearing, item B1, general plan amendment, zone change. Plan Development Amendment and Two-Lot Parcel Map, Eagle Creek Golf Course. Community Development Director Warren Frace will give the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the Council, this item before you, as you just mentioned, is an amendment proposed at the Eagle Creek Golf Course. We're looking at a general plan amendment, a zone change amendment, and a new master plan of development along with a parcel map.
Warren, before you begin, maybe we should do ex parte.
Very well.
Councilmember Clay?
I had a question for Kelly this morning, and I called him. It was in regards to the CCNRs on the four parcels that are down below, not the houses up on top, the acre and a half parcels. And he basically said that they conform to whatever the city regulations are. And my question was in regards to animals like 4-H projects and those types of things, not on the open space, but on the four houses that have had the quick claim property back to them. Yeah,
right. Councilmember O'Malley,
I believe I talked with Mr. Gearhart over a year ago in earlier stages of, I think, when it was originally proposed to be a football field or something. I had some discussions around that time. Since then, with the new proposal, I've talked with about 5 or 6 of the neighbors.
George? I also sat in on the Planning Commission procedure, the whole thing. So, okay. Yeah.
Since our last public hearing.
I was also approached by Mr. O'Brien, and I did go to see his house and walk his property and look at his access issues. and I have spoken to no one else.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, Warren. Go ahead.
Thank you. Start out with just the location of the project. The project is located on the southern gateway into Atascadero City. You see right here, US 101, this is the Santa Barbara Road interchange located here. This is the project site as it was photographed a couple years ago when the golf course was still in operation. There's Santa Barbara Road that comes around and then provides access to the project. And this is Atascadero Road located right here. You can see the Dove Creek project right there and rural residential surrounding it. This is unincorporated lands within the city sphere further south. This is the current approved master plan of development. There was a cul-de-sac of houses that were originally built on Eagle Creek Court. They're on a hill overlooking the golf course. This is the way the golf course was originally approved and was operated until it closed a couple years ago. There was four additional houses that were approved on Atascadero Road located here. One thing to keep in mind, just so you're aware, you'll see that the parcel lines that are shown in yellow extend into the golf course in a number of locations. That is the way the project was designed. The golf course had easements along all the lots that had frontage to the golf course, and that allowed the golf course to operate in it and maintain improvements, which were the greens and the sand traps and that sort of thing, on private property. Now that the golf course has ceased operation, those easements have been quit claimed back to the original property owners. General plan land use. This is the land use diagram. The houses on Eagle Creek Court were designated as single family residential X. X means half acre minimum lot size. The houses down on Atascadero Road, those four were single-family residential Y, Y being 1 acre minimum. And then the golf course was designated what's called C-Rec, which was a commercial recreation zone that allowed commercial recreation uses like golf courses. The zoning for the site, we had the same corresponding residential X and Y zones. The golf course was designated what's called LS, which is special recreation. And then on top of the entire site, posing to allow tonight, would be located up in this white area, which are outside the 100-year floodplain, as well as all their septic systems and leach fields would be located outside the floodplain. A little bit of project history here. 1991, the PD8 rezone was approved. That originally allowed for a golf course, a driving range, and the 13 houses on Eagle Creek Court. In 1998, the PD8 was amended. That allowed the golf course to take access off Atascadero Road. Originally, the project was conditioned to take access off Santa Barbara Road. In 2000, PD8 was amended again. In this amendment, the driving range was eliminated and four additional housing units were approved in the location of the driving range. In 2005, the golf course was closed. The applicant then applied for an amendment package to the city. We conducted a study session in 2006 where the applicant presented his original concept, which Councilmember O'Malley alluded to, which was the idea of some sort of youth sports field in this area. The neighborhood and the community felt that was too intensive of the use, and the council directed the applicant to come up with a less intensive use for the site. The applicant returned in 2007 for a second study session. At that study session, he presented the concept that's before us tonight, which is to create two additional housing units where we have existing golf course buildings, and then to restore the remaining golf course site in a natural native landscape. So this is the proposed amendment that the council saw at the workshop. The existing golf course clubhouse located right here would be converted into a single family dwelling. There's a support shop building located on Atascadero Road that would also be converted into a single family dwelling. There's another support shop that's out here in the middle of the golf course. That would just be an accessory unit that would belong to this unit here. And then the golf course area located and shown here in kind of the light green, that would be the area that would be restored with a native landscape. There'd be a permanent open space easement and different deed restrictions and maintenance requirements that would require this to be maintained permanently as a natural open space. This is a photograph of the clubhouse building that would be converted into a single-family residence. This is a photograph of the shop building on Atascadero Road that would be converted with the restoring some of the habitat zones that have been lost along Paloma Creek. This is just a photograph of the site. You can see that the golf course has basically died out. There's some non-native trees in there that are also in poor repair. So the landscape and trees that won't survive without the irrigation will be removed, and that'll all be replaced with a more natural landscape that won't require as much irrigation or maintenance in the future. The benefit of the project has been identified as the creation and preservation of this natural space restoration area. The issue of project fencing has come up. After the golf course closed, this temporary wire and pipe fence was put up basically for liability reasons around the golf course. That is a temporary fence. That fence will be removed and replaced with a new white rail fence that will match the existing fences that were already installed throughout the project. So along the perimeter of the open space area shown in this dashed line, that will be where the new wood rail fence will be installed. There's a number of existing improvements around the golf course clubhouse. There's a parking lot, number of staircases, and other facilities that supported the golf course. Those will all be removed on this exhibit, which is part of the project conditions, show where a new garage will be built, a new single driveway will be provided, and the location of the proposed septic leach fields for the project. Whole project has been designed so it's outside the flood ways and also is 100 feet from any blue line creeks, which is consistent with our plumbing code requirements. Long term, the city is looking at improvements to the Santa Barbara Road interchange. The Public Works Department is working on a study right now to extend the life of the interchange by putting traffic circles or roundabouts at the ramp heads. This roundabout here, we currently have an agreement with Syntex Homes to build this. We envision that a secondary roundabout will be required on the other ramp head in the future. We are recommending that we acquire some additional right-of-way from the edge of the golf course property so that this roundabout can be built in the future. That's conditioned on the map. You can see this is the open space area. This is the location of the right-of-way dedication that is being proposed. And then add some additional language about the maintenance requirements and expectations for the use of that open space area. This exhibit here shows what the proposed general plan and zoning changes are. So the area inside the black boundary is the area that we would be amending. So the general plan would be amended from commercial rec to single family residential Y, which is the 1 acre single family zone. And then the zoning in that area would be amended from LS, PD8FH, which is flood hazard, to RSFY, which is a corresponding single-family residential Y zone. PD8 would remain, and the flood hazard overlay would remain as well. There is a provision in the PD overlay that would prevent this larger lot, which is almost 9 acres, from being further subdivided. So even though the minimum lot size is 1 acre, the minimum lot size on that one lot would always be 9 acres. We did in the last week or so receive a comment letter from the Air Pollution Control District regarding our mitigated negative declaration was out for circulation. They've asked for a couple additional conditions or mitigation measures being added to your project. I did hand out a memorandum to the council at the beginning of the meeting that summarizes the comments that we've received from the Air Pollution Control District. We're recommending you just add those during your motion to approve Resolution A, which is for the mitigated negative declaration. Those are all their standard mitigation measures for construction impacts to air quality. Planning Commission has reviewed this project. They are recommending approval. During their review of the project, they did make four changes to the project, and those are included in your resolutions. They're recommending that the existing fence be repaired where needed, that we allow limited grazing animals for the purposes of wildfire fuel management, that we make sure or we condition the project that the CCNRs for the new tract are consistent with those for Eagle Creek Court, and that a six-year landscape maintenance bond be required for the open space area. So the Planning Commission is recommending tonight six different actions to the City Council. The first would be to adopt the resolution certifying the mitigated negative declaration. We would also recommend that you incorporate the conditional use permit, which amends and adopts the master plan of development for this site. And then the sixth action would be to adopt draft resolution D, which approves the vesting tentative parcel map for the site. And that will conclude staff's report. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Warren. Any questions of Councilmember?
Yeah. Okay, is the...
We can use the lights. Councilmember Clay, go ahead.
All right. Is the APCD, is that just site-specific? It's for that site only?
Yes, and it's, they just apply to construction, basically. Oh, right. During the construction, we have to take care of the dust and those sorts of things.
And did the developer get a copy of this?
Yeah, they copied him originally, and I did send the developer's representative a copy of this memo and spoke with her tonight about it.
Right. Could you go back to the map that showed the open space and the...
Is that map okay?
No, Got to keep going. Hold on. Back. No, you passed it. Keep going. There. Oh, okay. So, I guess my question is in regards to the CCNRs. I understand there's CCNRs up here, and one of the people that own the property there said they don't allow animals there, farm animals. But these lots here are different. You know, they're like acre and a half, and I don't think that is that part of the Planning Commission's proposal.
Yes, it is.
Okay, because from my standpoint of view, we're trying to have a country atmosphere and a country attitude, and these parcels here certainly they're acre and a half, and they're grassy, and if you go right over to the Eaglet Ranch, there's hundreds of cows that walk through here every day and go through the creek that goes through there, and so on and so forth. So I'm concerned that if that's the case, you're going to end up making lawbreakers out of these folks here, because they're going to want to have a project animal or, 4-H animal or so on and so forth. And then I would like to see it cut off right there, Warren. In other words, this to be yellow just like the rest. That's going to be an acre parcel right there, would it not be, or something like that?
Yes. There'll be a one-acre parcel here.
Right.
Go to this map. You can see here's the four lots you were referring
to. Ability to, to have project animals or to have a horse or whatever. They're down below. They're adjacent to the Eaglet Ranch. It has, cows running all over it. That's my concern. I hope the rest of the council would see it that way. Country attitude, country atmosphere. What's wrong with a horse and a goat and some 4-H projects?
Well, the condition, as I understand it, talks about limited grazing of animals for fuel modification.
Yeah, that's just for that area there, George.
I see.
See, I'm fine with that.
You're talking about the four lots.
The four lots, and then it'll actually be six lots, because there's going to be two lots. They're larger parcels. They're down. This is up above, and those are, some pretty high-class homes in that little cul-de-sac. It's supposed to be a gated community at one time, but the others should be able to have animals on their property. I mean,
well, I think it's a question we can ask Lindy Althaus, who's the biologist.
Sure.
Anything else? Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Yes. Thank you, Warren. I have a question on page 78, where the Planning Commission has made some recommendations. The recommendation of the existing rail fence shall be repaired as needed. And I'd just like to know, who makes the determination as needed? Is that the property owners, the developer, the city?
It would probably be a combination of the applicant and the city staff. We would probably go out there and walk it together and agree on which areas were either broken or damaged or deteriorated and needed to be repaired.
All right. And then as related to the landscape maintenance and management plan, now there's going to be a restoration plan that is going to interface with the maintenance and management plan. Is that the way I understand your presentation?
Yeah, this is the restoration plan. So this shows conceptually what's going to be planted and where. We'll turn this into a final construction document before they actually install anything, and they'll have everything in great detail. The purpose of the maintenance plan is to ensure that for 6 years this is maintained and managed in a way that all the plants survive and mature, and if things need to be replaced or repaired, that there's a mechanism through the bond to guarantee that that occurs.
And how soon after the restoration plan is undertaken does the maintenance plan occur?
Transfers them to someone else. That's really the purpose of the maintenance bond, is to make sure it's maintained once the developer transfers it to a second party. Typically, we're not as concerned that the developer that's installing the improvements won't take care of them, because he's on the hook through the different bonds and the different subdivision agreements to install that and maintain it until it transfers to another party.
All right. In page 84, there's a indication at the very bottom of the paragraph. It's discussing a proposed gated gravel driveway that will take access from Santa Barbara Road. It says the purpose of the driveway is to provide access to the rear of most of the existing lots. And I'm curious, how many is most?
That'd be all but one.
Okay, and what is the specific purpose of the constructing the driveway to provide access to the other lots?
I'd like to have the applicant explain what it is. I think there's some septic issues and things like that that might need maintenance, and they're located at the toe of the hill, and that's the purpose. But the applicant probably better clarify the purpose of the road.
Great. Yeah, specificity is what I'm looking for in the terms of, is it a safety issue? What specifically is it? Thank you.
Councilmember Barreau.
When we had first looked at this, we talked about restoration of the golf course, and I see restoration of part of the golf course, and I see some big chunks of it not being restored. Was that discussed at all with the applicant? Because all those, I guess it's four lots, they still have old greens and, you know, refuse piles. They have a lot of old. What's going to happen with those lots at the bottom of the hill? They get no restoration at all. They get no.
Are you speaking of this area here?
I'm talking about at the bottom of the hill, where they have the SFRY lots, right? See, all that area that used to be an easement for the golf course, that is still messed up. Is that proposed to be restored at all, or any kind of compensation, or?
No, that's not part of this restoration plan. The restoration plan's just for this area out here.
Solely for that one parcel. Okay. So for me, I look at that and say, that's not really complete. And I'll have questions for the applicant about that also. Everything, whether you want them to or not. So I think it's a little too open-ended, allowing clearing for wildfire. Because when do you say the season stops? I think that would be kind of a little bit too loosey-goosey. And I do think that, you know, if we're considering this whole project a PD, then CCNRs should be the same for the whole project. I don't think we should have, you know, one park gets one set and the other park gets another set. So I support the Planning Commission on that. And I think the rest of my questions are for the applicant. Thank you.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. One question I had, why was APCD's input so late? Do we know?
It wasn't actually late. It was within the specified response period of time, but it did come after or while we were in the middle of preparing the staff report, so we weren't able to get the all the corrections into your staff report. That's why we have this memo tonight.
But it seems like it should have been considered by the Planning Commission earlier when they were reviewing this project. Is that typical for APCD to provide input at this stage?
Well, they were within their specified time limits. The review period was open when we went to Planning Commission.
Okay. I did notice that they did make some positive comments. I think it's a good green build technique where we're using existing buildings, converting them to residential, and I think just it doesn't impact the footprint, and that's a ultimate in recycling building materials. So I thought that was commendable. This is a general plan amendment and zoning change, commercial to residential. The particular category of the existing commercial does that exist anywhere else anymore? It seems to be very unique.
It's very limited. There's some more on the north end of town.
And I was curious about the clubhouse building, if there wasn't any potential for not only the clubhouse building but the parking. It seems unfortunate that a lot of that has to be taken out or eliminated. There was no way to incorporate it into any other uses cost effectively or with agreement of the neighbors. I don't know if anything else could have been done.
Well, we're creating a single family residential use, so it's
thing in there.
Yeah, it was two separate buildings. They're going to infill the breezeway that separates the two, and it will become one large house.
Okay. Thank you.
Seeing no other council questions, I'll close it to the council and open it to the public. Jamie?
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Jamie Kirk, and I am representing Eagle Creek Golf Course LLC this evening. We're very pleased to be here this evening. This has been a long road for us, and we're looking forward to hopefully a positive approval from you this evening. I do have a PowerPoint presentation that I'd like to run through just to give you some highlights of what we've been doing over the last year. As you know, this is a 10-acre site previously operated as Eagle Creek Golf Course, and the golf course closed in spring 2005. We originally submitted a project for review to the city back in September 2005. Since submitting the project in September of 2005, we've had two city council study sessions to look at options for the site, as well as four neighborhood meetings. The last time you saw this project was in April of 2007, and at that study session, we brought to you a concept project that had neighborhood support, and that project was to amend the master plan of development of the site to allow a two-lot subdivision for two single-family dwellings on individual parcels, and then we also looked at the idea of a restoration plan and an open space easement. We didn't have all the details finalized, but that was the project that we brought forward to you with some direction to see if we had some support from your council to move forward with that. As you may remember, we had representation from the neighborhood at that meeting, and there was a neighborhood statement that was brought forward. And what that neighborhood statement was intended to do is let your council know some of the things the neighbors were looking for in the project to bring forward, that was going to come forward for hopefully final approval. And some of those key items were returning the golf course area to its natural state, filling in the lake and removing the dead trees and vegetation, planting native trees such as oaks, keeping the existing healthy trees on site, and at that point they were looking at retaining the large willows, recontouring the topography, bring forward a fencing plan, clean up the creek area, and they wanted to ensure that future project on the site, future, when we all sat around and talked about the various components, the landscape plan, the grading plan, how it should look, where the fencing should go, and that resulted in the current project alternative that you have before you for consideration this evening. We submitted that revised application to the city over 5 months ago in June. And that project includes, as Warren ran through it, a general plan amendment, a zone change, a conditional use permit, and a parcel map, which the ultimate result of that is two single-family dwellings on two individual lots. The parcel map, we have a one-acre lot and an almost nine-acre parcel. Primary access to this site is to remain from Atascadero Road. We do have the grading and landscape restoration plan, an open space easement over a portion of Parcel 1, and we're also including a front yard landscape plan for proposed Parcel 2. The question was brought up by Councilman O'Malley on what's happening with the existing structures, the clubhouse and the pro shop, and here's a floor plan that shows the how the two floor plans relate to each other, and you can see the area highlighted in red. That's where we're looking at doing conjoining the two buildings to complete just over a 3,500 square foot residence. And then included here are some elevations, some renderings to show what those elevations look like. We're also including converting the interior of the existing maintenance building. There's no exterior changes proposed to the building. It will basically be tenant improvements to put in some walls. Right now, if you walk into that building, it's just an open storage area. So that will be converted to a single-family residence. The grading and drainage plan, this was something that was worked out with the neighbors as well as our engineer and our biologist. We wanted to see how they, you know, their vision of they wanted the lake filled in, what do they want removed, how do they want it to appear, and they really wanted it to be recontoured to a more natural landform, again removing the dead trees, filling in the lake, and removal of the existing golf course parking lot and infrastructure. There's an exhibit showing the grading and drainage plan. We also addressed fencing. They wanted to make sure we had compatible fencing and to really make sure that the fencing that's out there right now, the temporary fencing that we installed for security purposes, was green of trees up along the residential lots. So there will be some screening associated with that, but you can still, the existing residents will still have a view through those trees into the meadow area. This landscape restoration plan was a collaborative effort, again, between the neighbors. We worked with them on species, the type of species, the size of them, and the locations, and our biologist, our engineer, and our landscape architect worked together with the neighbors on that design. And Lindy Aldhouse, she is here in the audience this evening if you have questions of her. And some of the recommendations that she had in her report was removal of the dead vegetation, including the willow trees, replanting with native trees, and the mix that we included was recommendations from Lindy as well as specific requests from the neighbors. Wanted to make sure that they had planting of native perennial grasses, shrubs, and ground covers. And there is written into the biological recommendations as well as the project mitigations is that the biologist will be outside to monitor any grading of the restoration work within 50 feet of the creek. Another component, a landscape plan for proposed Parcel 2. This is just to update the landscaping in front of that, the one-acre parcel, that existing shop building, just so that it has the same similar curb appeal to the other houses on Atascadero Road. We are proposing to have an open space easement over a portion of Parcel 1, and that open space easement will preclude any future subdivision, recreational, and commercial uses on the property. The open space easement will be recorded with the final map because, you know, we thought that that was an important thing to bring forward because one of the concerns that was brought up by some of the council members at the last meeting and the neighbors is how do we ensure that there isn't going to be a future use come forward on the site? And so the open space easement was something that we presented as the mechanism to ensure that it remains an open space in perpetuity. Access to the open space easement will be made available to the immediate neighbors whose property abut the open space area, and this is for maintenance. We were installing a road along the perimeter, see if I can, along the perimeter to get over here to the existing shop buildings here. So whenever the neighbors saw that as part of our plan, they requested, the neighbors that abut it, they requested if they could have use of that to access the lower portions of their lots. And as you can see, there's a creek crossing there that would be required in order to get access to that parcel. And I just think it is important to note that these parcels over here do not have access either.
So you can't reach it with a road without crossing the creek, is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
As far as maintenance goes, the as Warren showed in one of his slides, there were private easements over the landowner's parcels that were used for the golf courses. Those have since been deeded back to the original owners, and each owner is now responsible for maintenance on the individual lots. We've been working with each neighbor individually to address the preference for the existing golf course improvements on the lot. Do they want them removed? Do they want them to remain? What type of work would they like to have done on their individual lots for restoration? So we're working with them individually. And as far as the landscaping and maintenance of the open space area, that will be the responsibility of the lot owner of Lot 1. Just concluding comments, we'd like to point out that this project, we've been working at length with city staff as well as the neighbors. I think it's a great example of a successful collaborative effort for all of us coming together with a consensus for you. And we hope that you will put this project to rest. The neighbors, I know, are anxious to have some activity out on the site, and we'd really like your adoption of the project tonight.
Thank you, Jamie. I would agree that the neighborhood meetings have brought you to this point very successfully. Any council questions of Councilmember Burrow?
You mentioned that you were working with the individual lot owners for the lower lots. Are you proposing to pay for some of the work that's going to be done, or is this, what kind of relationship is there?
We have sent out individual mailers and asked preferences. Would you like us to come in and remove the sand traps? Do you want to keep, would you like to keep the holes? And whatever they're asking, you know, within reason, removing the golf course improvements and doing some minor restoration, we'll be paying for that.
And because I did go see Mr. O'Brien, do you consider supplying a bridge to access his property not being reasonable?
He had requested a bridge, and with the price tag that we looked at for a bridge, it was between $30,000 to $40,000, and we felt that that was not reasonable as part of his request.
About how much per lot do you think you're spending?
The timeline that we've been giving them, it's all contingent upon the city approval process. It's taken us quite some time to get here. We'd like to have our grading permits issued and ready to go at the end of the rainy season, which would be April 15th.
So probably within a year.
Yeah,
hopefully.
I mean, our goal is to have construction started. That's assuming that the permits are issued. We do have some regulatory permits in addition to the city permits that we're going to have to go through, but our goal is to be starting work after April 15th.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question of the city attorney. What is the legal process for going forward and advertising a lot which is not yet approved? You can't really do that, can you?
Well, I don't. I don't believe that they can advertise it if it hasn't been approved. They may be able to advertise that it's being considered for approval, but they certainly can't enter into a contract for sale of an unapproved lot.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Clay?
Similar question, but they could advertise contingent upon the approval of the project, right? They could they could come into some sort of agreement with someone that wanted to purchase contingent on the project being approved.
It depends on what they say in the advertisement.
Right. Thank you.
You're next. Yeah, you're next.
Jim, I was concerned on the maintenance. I mean, you're going to go through all this, and you're going to fix the open space the way they want it. You're going to fix the back of those properties the way they want it. And then whoever buys the open space lot, how are they going to be saddled with maintenance on that whole 9 acres or whatever it is?
They'll be saddled with the way the project has been conditioned, and something that we've agreed to through the neighbor consensus process is making sure that that landscape gets established. And so we've agreed that there will be a maintenance, there was going to be some sort of mechanism for maintenance, and that's to ensure that the plants get established. That will be irrigation and trimming and whatnot. Because we're doing native drought-tolerant plants, Lindy Aldhouse, our biologist, would say at a maximum 6 years, and that landscaping should be...
Regulations is whatever weed abatement is...
Right. In the 6 years was the thought, it was a recommendation from Lindy Aldhouse, our biologist, that that's what it would take to ensure that the landscape plantings, everything that we planted, is established.
I see. In regards to the parking lot, it seems to me that that would be a plus if, you know, rather than tear out all that, that should be an option. I know that it's scheduled to be tore out. It seemed like if I was purchasing that, you know, that might be you put the garage there, and that might be an option where you would have, a blacktop area that would could be used for anything. I mean, you know.
And I think if that's something that your council would like to include in your deliberations, we're open to it. I think we've been in this process so long that we got to a point of desperation.
I understand.
Of agreeing to do whatever we could just to move forward and get some resolution to the project.
And then my concern about the lower lots being able to have animals, just like Ellen, Councilman Burrow's property. You know, she has goats and stuff like that. It seemed to me that those lower properties should be under the similar type of thing.
Well, and I did bring that up at the Planning Commission hearing, because whenever, you know, the PD standards apply to all of the lots out there, not just the parcel under consideration this evening. And so whenever I saw the restrictions, saw more restrictions or allowed uses being taken away from those lots that have that existing entitlement, I did bring that up in my public testimony to the Planning Commission, and it seemed to open quite a can of worms. There was much discussion on it, and I know the owners, the testimony that was provided, the owners up on Eagle Creek Court, they have CCNRs that already limit the ability to have farm animals. I'm not certain if these four parcels do. It was something we brought up, and the commission went forward with the recommendation, no farm animals, and then to allow the limited grazing on the open space parcel for just for fuel modification.
Right. So if we struck the CCNRs, are equally positioned, and they were just for the top Eagle Creek Court, to me that would be fine. But I think, you know, I mean, it's just me, but I think we should allow those folks to have some farm animals if they want. You know, actually
specific reason.
The purpose of the access, as I provided in my presentation, was to provide access to those existing buildings that are located out in this area. So that was the original purpose of installing that road, so that the owner of parcel one would be able to get out to this location whenever we shared that idea with the neighbors. The neighbors that do directly abut the road asked us if we would be willing to grant them the ability to use that if they needed to use it for maintenance of their lots, and we agreed that we could do that.
Okay, so the specific issue for them would be a maintenance issue.
Correct.
And then what your slide indicated, removal of dead vegetation, mm-hmm. And are you familiar with Mr. O'Brien's predicament, or
I've spoken with Mr. O'Brien. He did have some. He expressed interest in being able to access the rear portion of his property for I think it's for weed abatement purposes. I don't want to speak for him, but that's how I understood it. I've been out to the site, and I've looked at it. You cannot drive a car across there, but you can, whenever, last time we were out there, you can easily walk across it.
When I refer to the issue of dead vegetation, it appears to me that the maintenance crews for the golf course did a lot of dumping on property which is now owned by Mr. O'Brien, and in the form of tree limbs. There's appears to be a tree, is large sections of a tree that were dumped there, and green plugs. And I think that's one of his concerns. We'd like to try to, you know, and out of the issue of fairness, is try to resolve this somehow.
And we have let Mr. O'Brien know that we're willing to come out, and if there are some areas that need to be cleaned up, we're willing to work with him on that. But we have been at a standstill where if we go out and start doing any work out on the property before we receive approval from your council, as well as approval from the planning department, building department, of a grading permit, the first thing that's going to happen is Warren is going to receive a call that there's some work going out there without a permit, and a stop work order will be noticed to us. So, you know, we're willing to work with him to go out and clean out some areas. If he's got some areas that need to be cleaned out, more than willing to do that, and we have outreached and let him know that we can do that.
And then the last, I guess, issue then deals with this issue of access to his property. There's and do that, but if he had an opportunity to bring in a piece of small tractor or something like that, he could achieve that. And so that, I think, is his concern. Is there any way that he can have access to that? And the only way I see that is with the potential of building some type of bridge. Now, I only offer this as food for thought, but the adjoining piece of property, there are three bridges there. And I don't know if it's ever been considered to, you know, approach that property owner to try to perhaps move one, disassemble, and then reconstruct it. This is just a potential idea. I'm trying to find a solution here for Mr. O'Brien.
And I do understand that. And whenever we were talking with Mr. O'Brien, we did encourage him to look at options for bridge, you know, bring something back to us as sort of a proposal, what would work for him. And he did not return to us with any formal proposal of bridge locations. We did encourage him to talk to his neighbor to see if he could negotiate an easement, because his neighbor currently lets him use the bridges over his property to access Mr. O'Brien's property, and we encouraged him to outreach to the neighbors. I think that those negotiations were unsuccessful, and I believe Mr. Gearhart did look at options of maybe taking one of the bridges and relocating, and I might bring him up to the podium because I don't want to give bad information, but I think it was because of the width of the crossing on Mr. O'Brien's, the bridges were too small to span.
That would be fine. I hope we might hear from Mr. O'Brien tonight too.
Okay.
Well, let's hear from Kelly. Mr. Gearhart.
Yeah, that's correct on the bridges out there, and I've talked to the neighbor there, and he's not willing to, the one where the existing bridges are. He's not willing to give them up either. He doesn't want to give them up. He has some kind of issue going on with his neighbor there, so they have a dispute about the access issues. So, you know, me trying to satisfy every single neighbor out there has been an ongoing battle, and every ongoing process satisfying, obviously, five of you staying up there, and five of them over there, and five of them, or 15 of them out there, and it doesn't seem to matter what I want to do. So I just figure I'll just take it as it is, and if you guys keep taking, pretty soon there's no more to take. So I guess we can go on this thing for a while, but I'm just letting you know there's no more there, and that's all. We able to put one of the bridges there that was an easy fix. You know, these bridges aren't cheap. They're, you know, $40,000, $50,000 a build. So, you know, time you get these permits dealing with the city, it could be another year or two. Got to go to Army Corps. You got to go to Fishing Game. You got to go to everybody else. You know, so, hey, you know, if we want to drag it out a couple more years, I guess we can figure that out too, so.
One other question. Do you think it's necessary to have CC&Rs on the lower parcels?
Well, first of all, I don't own them parcels, so I can't give them CC&Rs. So they're already there. They're existing, and if they want to put animals out there, that's their business. It's nothing to do with me, you know.
Okay, I see. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gerhardt. We'll have Jamie come back. Right, Councilmember O'Malley has some questions.
Thank you, and I don't know, it might be for Steve Kahn or it could be for Jamie. I wasn't clear on what's being proposed for the potential expansion of roundabout in the overpass area. If you could bring that slide back up. I'm not sure what is being expected or asked for or offered.
Yeah, we are in the process of studying interchanges throughout Atascadero and looking at roundabouts as solutions to instead of widening the bridges. And so in doing so with this general plan amendment, we're looking to get a right-of-way from a portion of this property for the future expansion of a potential roundabout.
How are we going to acquire that extra land there?
It would be part of the map, a requirement of the applicant to give it to us as part of his map.
So currently, the applicant has satisfied all but one neighbor, and I think the other neighbors are wondering how come the city isn't granting permits to get this thing going. But the city is going to ask for a piece of land, and the applicant is willing to give them that'll allow us to potentially expand the overpass or increase access on the overpass at some future time?
That's correct.
So the city's getting that land for free?
That's our request, yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's it?
One other thing.
Councilmember Clay?
Yeah, Jamie, on that road that goes in, where does the ingress and egress come, the road?
It's off of...
You got your...
Is that there? It's off of Santa Barbara. Thank you, Warren.
So there's going to be like a driveway?
It'll be a gated driveway.
A gated driveway,
yes.
I see. Okay,
it will
thank
be gated, and it will only be used for maintenance purposes.
Sure. Thank you.
And I did like to note that Lindy Althaus, our project biologist, as well as Casey Patterson, our landscape architect, and Ken Chacon, our civil engineer, they are here in the audience. So if you have any technical questions for our activity restriction.
And there's no way to get around that?
I'm sure there's some creative ways that your council could do that this evening.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember O'Malley?
I'm showing number three, but I'll go. I did want to commend the landscape designer on this. It looked like a very well thought out restoration plan, and so thank you for that. I know
we thank Casey also, him and also, and Lindy's assistance on this. They did a great job on the plan.
Unfortunately, while I was at physical therapy for quite a while, one or two of the neighbors happened to be at the same spot, so I had to heard a regular update and had to give a regular update on this, and I know most of the neighbors appreciated some of the plans and are
thank you
looking forward to them happening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Burrow has a question.
Yes.
Just a quick question. You talked about working individually with the property owners on the lower lots. I was just noticing that the Paloma Creek basically runs through those easements. So if there's going to be work to be done, would you consult with the biologist and the landscape? Okay.
Yeah, that'll run through for the projects are conditioned, you know, as part of the project, and any restoration in that area would be considered part of the project.
Okay, good.
It's important that some owners out there, as you may or may not have noticed, they've chosen not to have us do some work, and they've already done what they're going to do with their rear areas.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
And now if there's anyone else in the public who wants to speak on the item, Mr. O'Brien.
Hello, I'm Mr. O'Brien. I live at 13040 Atascadero Road. I do face a major problem. When the director and owner of Eagle Creek, of course, deeded this quit claim the area, approximately 1 acre, on February 5th of 2007, that is parcel 4 of track 2415 in the city of Atascadero, county of San Luis Obispo, state of California, according to map recorded April 16th, 2003, in book 21, pages 90 through 92 of the maps. Okay, legal, I had to put that thing in there. The first major problem is I don't have access. Blue Line Creek runs around my property in the back of my home. It's about 35 feet away from the center of my house. The creek has steep sides along the back. We're concerned about the fire hazards there. But without access, I can't do that. I have been verbally refused my request for bridge access. According to the plan, his company has submitted to the city for zoning change so the golf course can be sold. He has proposed building an access road along the perimeter of property so that all property owners will have access to their property from the rear. In other words, in our meetings, they said, yeah, we're going to put fences in, we're going to build a gate for you so you can get in there. Many of those owners have steep sides, and the only way they can get to the back of their property is through that access road. Unfortunately, this access road terminates prior to reaching my property, which is at the very end. We require a couple of bridges in this area to complete the road, and I'd still have to go across the creek to get to the property. For liability reasons, my neighbor next door does not want me to cross over his property unless I check with him first and tell him I'm going to go across it. And he's been very, very nice about it. But he's a quadriplegic, and he has some real problems himself getting into that area. We're not asking for a lot. My wife and I just want reasonable access with a bridge so we can maintain the property without damaging the creek. We want the same access granted to us and our property as our neighbors are receiving. I submit that as a condition of plan, Mr. Garrett is submitting to the council for approval, and as a condition of approval by the city council, Mr. Garrett build a bridge to my property prior to the plan being approved or as part of the approved plan. A second mitigating problem is this acre of land was used as a dump site for the golf course. The area is strewn with debris, waste products from the golf course. Weeds have grown up through this debris, and it needs to be cleaned up and hauled away. Problems both a fire hazard and a vermin hazard. Mr. Garrett has verbally promised that after the approval of his plan by the council, he'll clean up this area. But there's a lot there. We're talking about truckloads and truckloads of debris. At this point, we'd like the council to make a condition that the area be cleared of weeds, brush, and debris, either prior to or as part of the plan. Start thistle out there is a big problem. I've discussed this problem at a couple of the other council meetings and with Mr. Steve McCarris. I was told at the first meeting by Mr. Garrett when I spoke that I wouldn't get a bridge from him, that he would clean up the property site only after he got approval from the council. He also told me that if I pursued this matter with Mr. McKinney or the council, I've been saying, hey, we're going to give you guys a little, when we take the fences out, we're going to come and clear it out. Now I hear it's a little different. I support this, but I don't want it at my expense. Thank the council very much.
Best question.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Brien, Councilmember Clay has a question.
The total acreage of your property is?
It's approximately an acre and a half.
So you're saying that the house itself, the original purchase was on a half acre?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not really sure because as you don't have the right map up there, but if you had it, I could kind of show you.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's a weird-looking lot, but it's got Paloma Creek. I'm circling around it through the back. Yeah, if I could kind of point out, my area is right there in the front. Paloma Creek kind of comes right there, the bottom.
I see.
And if you notice, there's a driveway between my house and the neighbor's house. That was an access road to the golf course.
So this is your property
That's
here?
That's my property there.
I see.
Oh, let me see if I can...
Right along the freeway? Yeah.
I don't know if this works. Sorry, I got to push the button here. Okay.
Yeah, you got to push, right.
Okay, I think this is the creek, and that comes up, and then there's an access road right in here.
Yeah.
And I proposed that I was hoping that we could get a bridge built right in this area. And then the existing bridge is here. And all of this area, right in this area here, it's been used as a dump site.
Where's your house?
This is an old map. My house is right about here.
Oh, I see.
As you can see the creek, that's where my house is, 35 feet away.
Yeah, okay.
So if that other creek ordinance had been in place at the time, they wouldn't have been able to build it.
Yeah.
It's right at the middle of my house.
So most of your property actually is on the other side of the creek.
Right. Most of it is, and my wife and I would both love to be able to take care of it and maintain it.
So you're talking about you need something like 4.5 feet wide or 5 feet wide. You don't.
Yeah, about 5 feet. Something that I can put a John Deere tractor across.
Yeah,
a little mower. We're not talking about a big giant tractor. We're talking about a John Deere lawnmower.
And he has agreed to remove the debris, and that was...
Verbally, I've had an agreement that they said, he said he would come over after this plan was set, and he'd remove it. But I can't understand why he would deed this property back to me when they knowingly knew that this place was a dump site from cutting down trees, cutting down things like that.
I see. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. O'Brien, I think I heard you say that your neighbor would give you access if you asked.
When, on an individual daily basis, if I go over, I say, okay, I'm going to come over here and use it. But he's not there all the time. He lives here in Arizona. He's quadriplegic. Nice gentleman. He said that Mr. Gerhardt's company has talked to him about an easement. He is very concerned about liability, and I don't blame him. And he says, hey, what if I want to go sell this house? You know, do I want to have this easement where my neighbor can just walk through my backyard anytime he feels like it? And he didn't like that idea either.
So Mr. Gerhardt has said he would clean up the debris on the other side, and
verbally,
your neighbor
yes.
has said that he would give you access if you asked for it.
He says I'd get access if I asked for it temporarily, but once the fences are in, he's wanting to see me be able to get access myself through a bridge.
Okay. Thank you.
As a matter of fact, he's planning on closing off the walkway. There's a road. I don't know if you can see it. I think this is part of the road right here. And he's planning on putting a gate there. So okay. I'm kind of in a quandary. They'll get access to my property. I've got to go over a cliff.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner has a question.
Yes, Mr. Bryan. You don't necessarily know who. You may have a new neighbor next door in the future, and that person may not cooperate with you at all as far as access.
That's true, and especially if there's a gate.
And then the other issue is, I assume that because you abut Highway 101, you're probably concerned about fire issues?
I definitely am concerned about fire issues. I'd like to see this project get going as fast as it can, but I'd like to see this area get cleaned up. Now, I'm not rich. My neighbor has a few more bucks than I do. He was able to bring a crew in, but I can't afford to bring a crew in and clean that whole thing up. I just can't.
All right.
I've got lots and lots of problems, and I'm retired and 61. I have to do all the work myself.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien.
All right.
To the proposed plan. He's been more than fair, and this open space, when completed, will again be the attractive southern entrance to our city. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tissue. Jamie, we usually don't allow second comments. Anybody?
I have some questions for Jamie.
Okay, Jamie, you're in luck.
First question is, what did you want to tell us?
Thank you, Councilman O'Malley. I did want to just briefly respond to some comments made by Mr. O'Brien. And Mr. O'Brien was correct whenever he read his legal description in his opening comments. He does have a legal lot of record. That legal lot of record has access from Atascadero Road. There's never been access for him to this rear portion of the lot. There was an easement over it, but whenever these lots were purchased, it was always known that at some point the use of the golf course could go away, and that those easements would be then conveyed back to the property owners. So as a purchaser of a property, it's a responsibility to look at it and go into purchasing that with your eyes open. You know you don't have access now, and that if it does come back, there isn't a bridge today, there's not going to be a bridge tomorrow if that easement is conveyed back. So I think that's an important point to make, and it's not atypical in our rural areas, is that there are properties that are bisected by waterways or other topographical features that do provides some challenges for access.
Councilmember Clay has a question.
How did the golf course get to the spots where they could dump the wood and stuff like that in the plugs? How did they get there?
They were coming over the bridge from the neighbor's properties over in this area.
Okay, and that's the bridge that...
Those are existing bridges that are located on parcel, I think this would be parcel 3, so they're located on the neighbor's parcel.
I see. And then what would be the possibility of purchasing an easement from the adjacent...
I've talked to the neighbor, trying to encourage some cooperation between him and Mr. O'Brien on working together for an easement. And, you know, as the statement was made that some other person might purchase the neighboring parcel and not allow access.
Okay.
Okay.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. Now, Mr. O'Brien and at least 4 other parcels all gained property with this transaction eliminating the golf course.
All of these parcels had easements over them, as well as most of these parcels on the other side too.
How much additional land did Mr. O'Brien gain in this, do you know, approximately?
Approximately an acre.
So it was about a half acre parcel, and now it's an acre and a half.
Correct.
And it's been a while since I've ridden my motorcycle out there, and there were no houses in those days. Right. So I'm wondering, what are the requirements for fuel management? It's probably a fire chief question, but let's say there is a requirement to keep that. I know I've done a lot of weed whacking on 5 acres. I don't know what...
And
what
that's something that we've offered up with Mr. O'Brien, is that whenever, if the project is approved, we will go in, and once we have proper permits and we've gotten the blessing from the various agencies, we'll go in and do any cleanup of the creek that we see that's necessary and get it to a state, you know, do take out the dead material and do weed abatement so that he's left it at a good starting point. So then it's basically on your larger rural parcels, maybe once or twice a year you come in and do your annual weed abatement. And I would think for this parcel it can be done either with a weed whacker, or you hire once or twice a year a maintenance or landscape company to come down and knock the weeds down, which is in compliance with the county weed abatement requirements.
Okay, thank you. I'm still curious about the amount of land being given so that the city can do that roundabout.
How about that roundabout come about? I did bring that up at the last Planning Commission meeting, and we decided not to pursue it, but we had a concern that there was an offer of dedication for some project that might somehow happen in the future. What is this project? We don't know what this project is. This is not an adopted project. It's not a programmed project, and we're being required as part of this general plan amendment that to have an offer of dedication. So we did bring that up in public testimony, but again, feeling that, as I expressed earlier, just wanting to move forward and get approval, we find ourselves agreeing to some conditions that we normally wouldn't agree to. But I have to say, the one condition that and I think it's only fair to bring it forward, and I don't want it to come condition what wasn't being made through a condition of approval of the project, then the city would have to come in and negotiate the purchase of that for some project that might happen in the future.
You know, I just asked a question for our city attorney. I didn't think you could require someone to give up land like this. Could you comment on this?
You can ask them.
They could just say no, right?
They could say no, but then, okay, then you'd have to make a decision about what you want to do with the project.
Let's not go there.
Right. As I said, we're agreeing to conditions that we normally probably wouldn't agree to up front, because we would like to see this project put to bed from our perspective, as well as the other neighbors that live out there on Eagle Creek. There's a certain level of frustration that we're hearing from them. Let's just get this project approved. Why is it taking so long? We want to see some restoration done, and we're trying to work with them to have that happen.
That's what I've heard from the neighbors.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come back.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie. Anyone else want to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the council. And I want to put in my 2 cents here. I've been at this longer than Kelly Gearhart. I was on the original Planning Commission when Eric Michelson brought the original golf course forward. And this has so many changes to it over the years. I mean, the lot that Mr. O'Brien owns was created because of the lights of the golf course. And so it just goes on and on. And I think I want to get past this. I think it's time to accept. I think this is a very generous proposal, and I think it's time to accept what is being put forward here. Councilmember O'Malley?
Thank you. And with that, just to get this started, I move that we adopt Planning Commission recommendations with the addition of incorporating the APCD letter of 10-2907 and mitigation measures.
I'll second that.
Discussion? Yeah, please.
Councilmember?
Clay. I thought that was going to be a tennis facility when Michelson first came forward.
It was. He had a clubhouse tennis facility. Yeah. It was a what do you call it?
Just testing your memory, George. That's all.
Yeah, it was a clubhouse.
Right.
A private club, and it was going to have a swimming pool, and that was one of the attractions for people in the community. But it was going to be private.
Right. What I would like to suggest that since they're allowing animals to do weed abatement on the...
Well, I think I want to go forward with what is on the table here, so I would not acceptable to the second.
No second.
Give me an A for effort, okay.
So there's a motion on the floor. Please speak to the motion. Councilmember Burrow.
I'm concerned about allowing animals on there to graze. This is supposed to be an open space for the natural animals that are there, and if you allow cows or whatever, they can do a lot of damage to whatever you're trying to establish, and I don't think it's appropriate. I think that CC&R should be consistent between the upper and lower parts of the community, and I think we also need to include some kind of timeline. I'm concerned that we're going to approve this and there'll be no timeline for completion. And I think it would be a comfort for the owners to think that maybe in 1 year's time it would be completed.
My understanding is it's been a problem for the city to get permits approved on this. Can the city give some kind of a timeline when you can have this processed?
Well, we've already started the plan check on the project as directed by the council at the last study session, so I don't see a problem having the permits ready by the spring.
Well, for myself, as I said before, I would like to see this put to bed. I want to see this expedited.
I agree.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Yes, I don't intend to support this motion in part because I think it's fundamentally unfair to one citizen who assumes the responsibility for weed abatement in an area that can be argued that has high potential for fire. And I think, as I said, it's fundamentally unfair.
I take Mr. Gearhart at his word that he will clean up the property, and I think that every year weed whack probably at least 3 acres of my 5 acres, and I'm 67.
Right.
And well, soon be 67.
And by the way, George, there's a lot of people out there that will do the weed whacking with,
sure.
Handheld weed whackers. They do a good job. Yeah.
I call the question.
Yep, good.
Okay, ma'am, roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
No, and I do not see the public benefit, and I think it's a loss to the...
The agenda is the Title IV, Title VII, Title VIII, Local Building Code and Fire Protection Code for the City of Atascadero. Deputy Community Development Director Ken Foreman will give the staff report.
Yes, just real quick, I want to introduce Ken. You don't see him very often, but he is our building official, Deputy Community Development Director for Community Development. Ken's done a lot of work over the last 6 months putting this together. We've worked really closely with the Fire Department, Public Works Department, the Planning Department to pull this together. So just like to thank Ken for all his hard work.
Thank you, Ken.
Could I make a comment?
Sure.
And I did want to publicly thank Mr. Foreman as well. I've heard from builders all over the county that I think some came here to get our class because they weren't offered in by any other cities. And it was pretty unanimous of folks really appreciated the program that our city came up with. And I think now other cities are copying it. But this is some pretty major changes on building code, and I think staff.
The main concern with this transition has been transferring from the Uniform Building Code, which has been the model code in the state of California for over 50 years, to the International Building Code. While we've been using out here in California the Uniform Building Code as its model code, there have been two other model codes throughout the country. One is the Southern Building Code, used in the South, and BOCA, which has been used primarily in the Northeast. Since about the late 1980s, these three code bodies have been working together to blend these three codes into one code that can be used uniformly throughout the country. The International Building Code is a result of that effort, and most of the country has been using the initial draft of the International Building Code for the last 3 years. So California is coming in on the second iteration of this code. So a lot of the confusion and hiccups with this code have been worked out throughout the rest of the country. The typical changes we're finding in the new international code have to do with terminology. A lot of the terminology has changed. The location where we find code requirements has changed, and also specific code requirements have changed. Guardrails are going to be called guards. This is really not unreasonable given that quite often a guardrail can be a 4 foot high wall and really has nothing to do with a rail. Area separation walls will be called firewalls. Fire barriers are going to be called fire partitions. And there's a lot of these changes in terminology in the new International Building Code. One of the new code requirements is going to be when a design professional is required on a project, a design professional in responsible charge is going to be required to look over the plans and submittal documents for consistency. Emergency egress windows are going to change slightly. Currently, we require 5.7 square feet for an emergency egress window. This is out of a bedroom. And in many cases, this can reduce down to 5 square feet. Natural light and ventilation has historically been 10% of the floor area for natural light, and 5% of that floor area has been required for natural ventilation. This is going to be reduced to 8% for light and 4% require a licensed professional to design. These requirements are going to become more restrictive. Formulas for wind load and seismic analysis are going to change. On October 25th of this past October, we did a community informational workshop, and as Councilman O'Malley suggested, it was very well received. It was very well attended. The state mandated codes, as you can see, the building code is based on the international code, and the fire code is also based on the international code. The mechanical and plumbing codes are going to remain based on the uniform code, and the electrical code has historically been based on the national electrical code, and that will also remain the same. The city is proposing to adopt the 2006 International Wildland Urban Interface Code, and this is an updated version of the 2003 edition that we're currently using right now. And we are also proposing to adopt the Internal Property Maintenance Code. This is in replacement of the Uniform Housing Code and the Uniform Code of Abatement of Dangerous Buildings, which are no longer being published. As we were going through the adoption process and looking at the municipal code and the ordinance changes, because of the text in the International Building Code as opposed to the Uniform Building Code, it made more sense to completely repeal and recreate the building codes as opposed to just making local modifications. Here's the list of retained amendments that will just be in the municipal code as they are written today. We are going to reclarify the membership and function of the appeals board, which is the city council, and we're going to make slight modifications to private sewage disposal system requirements, mainly just for clarification.
A question on that. Who used to be the Board of Appeals? We had an administrative board, or we had an appointed board for a while, didn't we? Or
the city council is currently the appeals board, and this revision here is to reestablish that.
Okay.
This list of new amendments, it's actually designed to reestablish what we already have currently. Once again, they'll remain the same. And we have the adoption here of the International Wildland Urban Interface Code.
Could you explain that? The Wildlife Urban Interface Code. Is it the same? What?
This is the 2000. We're currently operating under the 2003 edition. This is not a state mandated code. This is a code that Atascadero has chosen to adopt based on its topographical issues the vegetation and things that come along with our natural terrain.
So have we strengthened it? Have we left it the same? What's going on?
This code is, I might have to defer to Chief Stone on this.
That's a great question. In the previous code that this is replacing, we found a lot of ambiguous language, and we've done, a good job, Tom Peterson and Ken Foreman, in trying to make the language mesh and try to come up with a code that's workable and makes sense. The previous code had a lot of restrictions that, frankly, weren't well thought out. And this code has written much better, and we've also amended it ourselves to make it more inclusive so that builders aren't hamstrung to some severe limitations that the previous code had. So if anything, this is slightly more relaxed, but this portion of the code is what governs and deals with the non-fire or fire-resistive construction in the wildland-urban interface.
Thank you.
I think if you look on page 206, you'll see a listing of some of the amendments.
And very similar to the International Building Code, the International Fire Code has new text language, and we've made every effort to add new language that actually reestablishes our current fire code requirements. Septic system requirements have also been revised slightly, mainly to maintain consistency with the regional water quality control basin plan, and also to clarify when septics are allowed and when a connection to a public sewer is required. The appendix chapter J in the projects that are submitted prior to or on December 31st of this year will continue to be processed and reviewed and inspected based on the current codes. Projects that are submitted on or after January 1st of 2008 will be obligated to process and inspect those based on the new codes at that time. I have here listed some reference sites, and these sites have additional information. They have books on the transition from the current California code to the new California code. They also have information on training availability, And billing services does have some handouts that are available. If anybody contacts us at the permit counter and gives us an email address or a physical address, we can get them some information that's also very helpful. That concludes our presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Has there been any discussion of when these codes will all become metric? Councilmember Clay.
Yeah, just on the septic systems and leach lines, so what was the basic difference there? You mentioned the water quality control district.
Mr. Kahn.
The basin plan had a definition for a distance from the flow line of the creek to the septic system leach field. Now is 100 feet. We're merely clarifying terminology inside the septic plan with the Regional Water Quality Board to make them identical.
And what did they say?
It's inside the text here. Ken, do you know what
if it's similar, just
Steve. 276 is the definition of water course.
Thank you. Water course. Under page 276, it says water course. This is identical to the basin plan, and note 8 describes what a water course is, and they're now identical.
Okay, and the 100 foot is still identical, or
that's similar. Correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. I've got several questions on page 206 for Mr. Foreman and for Chief Stone. And I apologize for not checking with you earlier, Chief Stone. Just a couple of clarification questions for myself. But on second bullet under building codes for Mr. Foreman, it says a new section establishes the plan, review fees, and time of payment from former code. Now, I just want to confirm my understanding is we are not voting tonight on changing any fees or payment schedules in this. That would be handled separately.
That's correct.
And that's also true at the bottom of page 206, the added sections established cost recovery for false alarms. Is that just a procedure how you can collect fees? Is that something that comes before the council on a fee structure for something like that?
Correct. You've already approved the fee structure.
Yeah, and so that's just reviewed how often, annually or?
Annually to when we've used RCS in the past, every 2 or 3 years to do a full comprehensive study or review.
Sure, thanks. I was wondering about if you could just clarify for me what a couple of these bullets mean in a general sense. And looking at under fire code, second bullet down, an amended section requires address numbers to have greater visibility if necessary. What's a layman's term of what's
contrasting numbers and letters? Frequently we'll have brown numbers on a brown background. We're looking for high contrast, white letters on a black background or vice versa, white letters on a dark brown background.
Not red on blue, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's tough.
I know there's a number of folks have asked about that, and being colorblind myself, I'm never sure of what size the numbers are. Is there a handout we have at the fire station makes it clear for folks on numbering and addressing?
That's a great question. I know we do have a handout. I believe it's in the front kiosk at the building department here.
Okay.
I'd have to check on that, though.
And it would be consistent with this. It would just tell a person what they need to do to be compliant?
Correct.
I concur with Chief Stone.
And just the last, excuse me, 1, 2, 3, 4 bullets down, an amended section prohibits portable unvented fuel-fired heaters in all occupancies. And I just wanted to, I know from my own experience during emergencies, we ran out and got some little propane heaters and we had nothing working in our house. I know a number of folks had that situation after the earthquakes. Any guidance on this? Or I assume in an emergency situation, you won't get a ticket for doing something like this?
The problem generally occurs in commercial structures where there's propane heaters or kerosene heaters being mm-hmm. used. The extreme fire hazard, because merely placing it too close to a flammable object can cause problems. And then you have the CO that's being vented from it
yeah.
in a confined structure.
So this would be more commercial application?
Well, the way it's written, it has application across. Yeah. However, the fire department does not have the right to walk in and inspect your home. We can inspect commercial and multifamily residential structures.
Okay, thanks.
But it's the kind of thing that the fire department would not recommend, right?
It's advisory. Correct, absolutely.
Yeah. Mayor Pro Tem Brenner?
Thank you, Ken. So as I understand, the primary purpose of this ordinance is to promote uniformity?
Yes, it's to provide us the tools we need based on our geographic, climatic, and topographic conditions in the city to regulate construction, as well as to adopt the new codes mandated by the state.
And then if we don't adopt by January 08, are there any sanctions or penalties?
What happens if we do not adopt the local ordinances, the state-mandated codes will become effective January 1st of 08 without local amendments.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you.
Another question.
Councilmember Barreau.
I have a question for the fire chief, and I apologize for not doing this ahead of time. It says, under the fire code, third bullet, an amended section prohibits water tanks for private fire protection. And my husband had this idea. Why is that considered not a good idea?
The problem herein lies maintenance. So frequently, metal tanks are put in. They're no longer maintained. It gives a false sense of security to the responding fire personnel. They see a tank, they expect water, and as regularly as they do have water, they don't have water, especially in the outlying county area. That's been our experience. So maintenance, overtime, and the reliability. And frankly, the fire code for a single-family residential structure on fire requires 1,500 gallons of water per minute for the duration of 2 hours. Most of those tanks are 3,000 to 6,000 gallons.
Thanks for the explanation.
Councilmember O'Malley.
A couple of questions. And I kind of caught the last part of that. So where is there a restriction against water tanks on private property? How is that worded?
This would be a restriction for water tanks in lieu of a fire hydrant
okay.
or a standpipe for water storage for fire suppression.
Okay, so you could still be allowed if you choose, because I have
Certainly.
A cistern system that actually can collect water from a lot of roofs and save it up and keep Mr. Broadwater's weeds green. And
I didn't understand that in the beginning.
Yeah.
That it was in lieu of.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's helpful. Last question I had was on page 207, an amendment to section 7-3.001 requiring sewer hookups if sewer is available within 200 feet of the proposed structure. And I just wanted to, that looks like it's for new structures, and it wouldn't be if there's a case, for example, clarify, a lot of folks are concerned about if you have an existing septic system that works and sewer becomes available, you're not required to hook up as long as your septic system continues to work. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
That's our ordinance, right? Yeah.
That is correct.
Okay, seeing no further questions by the council, I'll open it up to the public. Anyone in the public want to speak?
Hello, my name is Grant Morgan. This is about accessory structures, and this isn't listed in any of the amendments. But the proposed codes, as I understand it, will make less restrictive the accessory structures within 50 feet of a habitable building.
So I think you're talking about page 213. Do you have our staff report there? Where it says exceptions, accessory structures not exceeding 120 square feet in floor area?
Right.
Right, that's okay.
And in the previous code, that was you couldn't have that within 50 feet in a high-severity fire area. And this allows you to do it. And it seems silly if you're going to have all these weed abatement things within 50 or 100 feet to allow these kind of structures. Without fire retardant. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Anyone else in the public want to speak? Okay, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the council. Now, the way it's worded, bringing up what Mr. Morgan said, accessory structures not exceeding 120 square feet in floor area, and then it says, this is the exception, and agriculture buildings were located at least 50 feet from buildings containing habitable spaces on the same lot and 50 feet from an adjacent property line. It sounds to me like what he's saying is it shouldn't be, I guess the word and. So the way it's worded, the accessory structures not exceeding 120 square feet in floor area doesn't contain the clause of being 50 feet from the habitable structures. Only the agriculture buildings were located at least 50 feet from building lines. So is that intentional or?
That's intentional. That's
intentional.
The rationale and reason behind this decision, technically, if you read the code, and again, let me remind you, what we're amending is an optional code that this city has chosen to enact. This is not mandated by the state. Council 3 years ago decided that it would probably be a pretty good idea to build with fire-resistive construction in some of our outlying areas, the high and very high fire severity zones, because we have 20, potentially 15 to 20-minute response times to some of these areas. We looked at it from a practical standpoint, from a building standpoint, code enforcement, and fire standpoint. It would virtually be impossible to govern where people put a Rubbermaid shed that they bought at Home Depot or a local hardware store. And that certainly would be governed by this requirement. And it seemed very impractical, and we decided to omit that. And we had the luxury we could do that. We could omit it.
Okay, I think it would be clear if you just exceptions, accessory structures not exceeding 120 square feet in floor area, period. Agriculture buildings were located, the word
I absolutely
is,
agree.
Yeah.
Could I recommend we have two bullets?
Well, there's already two. It's one and two.
Okay.
We'll just add a number two and three. So we'll make that second point, point two, and then make the existing point two number three.
Okay.
Thank you, Warren.
Any other council comments, questions? Looking for a motion.
Move approval of staff's recommendation as
second.
Amended.
Got a motion by Councilmember O'Malley and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Question.
For the staff recommendation. Discussion by Councilmember Clay? No?
Let's vote.
Oh, call the question.
Yes.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Council Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Okay, the next item is management report, strategic planning options. City Manager Wade McKinney.
Mayor and Council, city staff have been evaluating options of strategic planning and facilitators for the annual event or next year's events. We've also been working with your council committee regarding the ethics campaign reform program, and we believe that that ethics campaign reform may be appropriate to take the place of the strategic planning program. The ethics campaign reform items, as we heard in the workshop that we had with Mr. Tom Shanks, is potentially a foundational issue which would be very important to establishing values and mission statements here for the city, which may lead us to more progressive strategic planning. We're asking for the council to discuss this, and we're recommending that you concur with this approach, and allow council members O'Malley and Barreau to continue their work in developing an ethics campaign reform program that could replace our strategic planning program for the 2008 year. We would try to draft a schedule of programs that would include community consensus building around these issues that would hopefully begin sometime in the early part of the year and take most of the year as and potentially more than the year, as we heard from Mr. Shanks. We're recommending that you review this as an option and provide us direction.
Okay, thank you. Any council questions? Seeing none, Councilmember Clay?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing none, I'll close it to the council and open it to the public. Anyone in the public want to comment? Mr. Broadwater?
Good evening, council. My name is David Broadwater. It is still evening. There are a couple issues in this. I've read the agenda as well as the staff report, and it's a brief staff report and doesn't really explain a lot, but I've watched this issue develop, particularly what's called campaign reform now, to what's being apparently proposed here, but also, as Mr. McKinney mentioned in the staff report, said you were looking at alternative facilitation options. And so it seems that there is a couple of subjects here. The general one about substituting this community ethics program or whatever it is for your strategic planning sessions, I assume that's what that means, but also looking at facilitators, I assume. And I wanted to mention to you, I know that Mr. Mathis and associates have been involved with your strategic planning sessions and other things, but I was able to obtain the city's disbursement listings for each month of this year from January through the month of August, and found that this city has given Mathis and Associates $63,920.51, rounding that off to $64,000 that the city has paid of taxpayers' money to Mr. Mathis and his associates for his services. And I think that it's worthwhile, as custodians of the taxpayers' money, that you look very seriously as to whether or not you're getting $64,000 worth of service from this person, particularly when you look at the fact that during this same time period, the city has provided to the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce just over $61,000, and to Main Street, almost $55,000. So Mr. Mathis is actually receiving quite a bit more in the $64,000 range than we're providing our local organizations in this town. And so I think there are some very serious questions as to whether or not you're getting the bang for the buck. Also, I recall after strategic planning sessions were discussed by your council, that you had in the past received two different reports from that, one generated by staff and the other one generated by Mathis. And comments were made from this dais here that the work product in terms of the report that he gave about the strategic planning sessions were significantly inferior to the ones that had been generated by our own staff. I think some of you can remember that discussion. And I don't know whether or not you even need to have a facilitator to tell you the truth, you know, to have a meeting and talk about these things. But I think because of the expenditure of money that it bears looking at. And finally, on the campaign reform, and now I was really disturbed to read this staff report, and I'll try to be brief because of the hour and my time's running out, but without going into the history, this first came up, as I recall, as a citizen-initiated issue, and we had a proposed ordinance to institute some campaign contribution caps on campaigns. And it's been morphing over the months, and now it's nearly unrecognizable. And we're going to have a community discussion about community values and community ethics. My God, you know, I mean, that's just an amorphous blob. It's meaningless. And I would hope that what you would do, since the original intent for this, I attended the workshop that Mr. McKinney mentioned. Those three people are all opponents of campaign contribution caps. I researched each and every one of them. One is a Republican Party activist, and another one is a member of the Sutton Law Firm, which files lawsuits all over this state on campaign finance against it. So we haven't had a balanced view yet in terms of a presentation on that issue, and now it's, it looks like it's going to be just swallowed up by this amorphous proposal here that I can't really see being specific enough. I would encourage you to tease out and go to the original intent of campaign contribution caps. We've had some presentations where it looks like there's significant information that it's worthy of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Bradley.
Okay.
Time's up.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to speak on this item? Saying none, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the council. Councilmember Burrow.
I hear the frustration of Mr. Broadwater. It is a very complex subject, and I, you know, we talk about having, you know, a couple-year timeline for this thing, but I am hoping that there are some general principles that we can put into place that can kick in for the next election cycle. What I envision as being a 1 to 2 year time period is that we will, you know, implement things in a stepwise fashion and not go from having absolutely nothing to the most ironclad thing there is in the world. I did want to mention that I heard that the League of Women Voters and I think it's AAUW, Audrey Hooper, who's the city clerk in San Luis Obispo, she's putting together a program this Saturday. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to attend because it would break my rule with my family not to do too much. It's a two-hour presentation that it looks at the city of SLO's ordinance. They do have campaign caps, and I guess Christine Mulholland is going to be there to talk about her experience being a sitting city council member who has, you know, lived through the ordinance. So if anyone would like to go and listen to that, I'm not sure I'm going, but I contacted her to see if we could get at least a tape of it, because I think that's one of the things we need to educate ourselves on, is that, you know, there's different ways of approaching this, and that's why I think we need to start with Mr. Hanks. I think it's Dr. Hanks. To lead us into that whole process and see if there are some things that we all can agree on right off the bat of things we can do to make it a better process for ourselves and for the city and raise our expectations of what a campaign season looks like.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner.
Yes, I just wanted to comment that originally I was one of the big proponents for finance reform. And I would certainly agree with Mr. Broadwater that things have morphed considerably. I still believe very strongly that big money corrupts the politics, and I wish the committee well in doing something that will help ground our next process, our next election process. And I'm supportive of that, and I look forward to see what you put on the table.
Councilmember Clay.
This Dr. Hanks, was he the third person that spoke at that? Right. I thought he...
Shanks.
I believe his name's Tom Shanks, and I think he's a doctor.
There was three people that spoke, right? He was the one on the end, the right side, right? Yeah. I think he was last, or maybe he wasn't. I don't know. Big money. You didn't have very much big money, and you got a seat, and I haven't seen where big money has done anything. I don't think that's right at all. And One of the things he said was that, you know, if you go into it with the idea that you're trying to stop something or, you know, or some group or something like that, then that's the wrong way to do it, that you go into it with the idea of you making things better. And, I've even heard it said out there that the big money is Walmart, and that's why we want to have campaign reform. And actually, that was one of the persons that that brought this up to start with. So I like this idea. I like the idea of Ellen and Tom working. You can't put a figure on the New Times and the Dave Congleton Show and headlines in the Tascadero News and stuff like that. I mean, some of those things are worth $30,000 or $40,000, in my opinion. And if one show or something like that is unbalanced and chooses to promote one person and de-promote another, and the same way with a publication like the New Times, why you can't put a price tag on that. And that's exactly what happened in the last election. And I like the idea of campaign reform, possibly, and in some sort of a system where we try to do things better. I'd like to see groups like the Homeowners Association that do mail-outs, that they should be a PACT, Stop Walmart, this new group that's being formed by the Tascaderos or whatever, they need to be, register as a PACT, because they spend more than $1,000, that's the limit. And any time a person does a mail-out, or a group does a mail-out, it's in the thousands of dollars, not $8,000. So I'd like to see us discuss all those things.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. Well, we probably can't do much about the media. However, I do agree on any organized group that is accepting funds and then spending it. I have to give account for every dollar I bring in and how every dollar I spend. And I think all folks that are involved in politics should do the same. And as Councilman Clay said, I think all folks expect is just a level playing field, that we have open accountability. And if someone is going to take out political ads for or against someone else, it ought to be reported, just like we have to do as candidates. I think we all learned that that's more of a complex and harder to reach goal than one might suspect, and that a preliminary step to that is just what's the foundation to that process. And I think a lot of it is just how we behave as individuals. I've seen a couple of campaigns where I was shocked at the flat-out mistruths, accusations made publicly, and it's in a very short amount of time where you don't have a lot of time to respond to those. And I think there is kind of an attitude that's become acceptable in our nation, let alone our city, of conduct that is just not very civil or polite. And I think what Ellen and I are hoping to do is just get a foundation for community dialogue, because right now I think we all know it's very difficult to talk anyone into wanting to run for city council. It's such a miserable experience. And if you haven't figured that out yet, well, give it another year. But I think the way folks are attacked with groundless accusations at times, I think it devalues the positions, and it calls into question just the whole process, and that doesn't lead to open and transparent government. So I think if we start with that ethics foundation, really I think it's more than just candidates, it's our community. How are we going to conduct ourselves publicly and just talking about our differences and our politics? And if we can't do it nicer, I think we're in serious trouble. I do think the AAUW is a good model. I think same with the chamber. I think more public opportunities for open discussion are good things to do. But I hope we can somehow get a consensus to tone down and at least have a way that there's a public way to respond to accusations in some kind of a process that's fair. I think that's all that folks really want to see. So I think there's a lot to do before you even get to the campaign finance piece that we learned is more complicated. And I appreciate working with Ellen on this. I think the professor, I've even accepted we go with the guy that's a professor from Berkeley, I believe, the ethics professor. And I think he had some good points to just help us think through that process as a community. So I welcome the challenge with Ellen.
Councilmember Clay?
Yeah, going back to the last election, which I was not disappointed in the results, but I was disappointed in the fact that that candidates and their supporters and the media took exception and tried to, strike out at staff. I thought that was really repulsive in my opinion. I don't think staff shouldn't be treated that way. They didn't have anything to do with it. These conspiracy theories when there wasn't any conspiracies. Headlines like the smoking guns when there wasn't no smoking guns. It's ridiculous. Headlines like candidates bully staff when actually they ask questions of staff. But who only people read the headlines in the first paragraph or so. And also, I like the idea that I guess it's just Dr. Hank said that a day or so before we have a session and people are able to confront all those ridiculous statements that get said in the as the election goes along. I thought that was great. So anyway, the last election was very disappointing in the way people acted.
Well, let me make a few comments before we get a motion. I certainly support what's before us, but I think that the discussion that we've heard here in the last, 10 minutes is an indication of how far apart we are. And I think we've sort of regressed. Things that improved around September, the recall was a farce, and things improved. And then suddenly this discussion has put us back into pre-September mode. And I'm in favor, Councilmember Barreau and Councilmember O'Malley, if they can come to some kind of agreement as to something we can all support. I think that we come a long way, but I think that just this discussion that we've just heard is an indication that we've got a long way to go. How about a motion?
Well, Georgia, I agree with you. We've got a long way to go, but I think in order to do that, we need to get out some of our frustration. And when someone steps up and says it's just that the finance is the only thing, I can't agree with that at all. I think there's a lot of.
But I think the issue of rehashing the last election or the first 9 months of 2007, mm-hmm. I think is not productive at all.
One does learn by studying history, and a lot of things occurred that I think we don't want to have happen in the future.
Yeah, but you don't have to. It's one thing to repeat history, and it's another thing to dwell on it forever.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. It felt real good, okay,
the only thing we're going to accomplish is get bogged down. And I
that's
agree
exactly
with
what's happening here, and let's have a motion.
Do we need a motion?
Sure, yeah.
Let's actually do it with a motion so that is clear.
I'll move that we go with staff recommendation. And,
second.
And hopefully Tom and Ellen can bring us all together.
A motion by Councilmember Clay and second by Councilmember O'Malley for the staff recommendation. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Barreau?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Okay, the next item is commission norms and procedures. Marcia, city clerk or
whatever.
Assistant to the city manager or whatever other title you bear today.
Thank you, Mayor Luna and Council.
The commission norms and procedures are in front of you tonight. These are based on your commission, your norms and procedures that you adopted in May, and then we've incorporated this to work for the commissions, brought it back to you October 9th, and we made some changes based on what the commission suggested and a couple of the changes that you suggested. So what you have in front of you tonight is that amended version for the commissions. So if you have reviewed it and approve, I would recommend that you adopt it, and I can distribute it to commissions or give me any suggestions if you have any for changes.
Councilmember Burrow.
I think it's wonderful. I think everything's almost perfect, but there is one on page 300. It's the 1, 2, 3, 4th bullet. And remember we were trying to take out some of those push-button words? I think we should just strike with no hidden agendas. I think the whole thing, commission members will subordinate political considerations to the good of the entire community while being straightforward about the philosophy behind their decisions, and just leave it at that without kind of being redundant. And it also takes out one of those push-button phrases.
I would agree with that.
That was my only suggestion for changes.
Page 300.
Page 300.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Fourth bullet.
Just delete with no hidden agendas.
Well, there's a lot of those, but you can delete it if you want.
Well, we don't want to be presumptive and assume that.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
That's the problem. If the assumption rises, then it's rather disrespectful, I think, to the commission in general. So I'm in total agreement with striking that language.
Anything else? Councilmember Clay.
I'm okay with that, but on the same page in the commission interaction and communications, it would be the bottom bullet, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Commissioners complaints on issues before the commission must declare their involvement in the issue before the item is reviewed by the commission. I thought we talked about a fact that if anybody, a commissioner, a council member, files a complaint, that their name would be known at that time, that it wouldn't have to come.
It's public information.
And we agreed to that.
Yeah, so this would just be redundant.
So it's public information. If I file a complaint on a neighbor or something like that.
Well, it isn't yet because we haven't had our ordinance rewritten by our three city attorneys that have been working on it, and we can't blame the new guy. He just got here.
But we did give direction, right?
We did give direction.
Okay, so, Wade, right. You're saying that they're in the process of working that up?
Yes, he's writing it down right this minute. Actually, we talked about it today. We will get your ordinance to you.
Okay so that's forthcoming then. That's fine. I'm okay with all the rest of it.
Well, unfortunately. So on page 301, chairperson's role, second bullet, in the second sentence, the chairperson shall not share his or her personal views while representing the commission. And so, I think it's a First Amendment issue. If somebody was a chairperson, So maybe I can get the city attorney to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I think that's an important clause to keep.
Well, it has to be worded differently.
You can disclose that this is my personal view and I'm not representing the commission.
Right.
Maybe we need to imply that the chairperson shouldn't imply that his personal views are the views of the commission.
I think that's the intent, but that's not what it says.
Yeah.
Other words.
Well, I think all views are personal to a certain extent. I don't know what the word personal adds to that. I do think there's some First Amendment concerns on that.
How would you word it such that it would be fine for the mayor to say this is his opinion on something, but he, unless he had the majority sort of support of the council, couldn't speak for the council saying this is the council's opinion?
Well, that's true whether it's the mayor or any individual council member.
How about the chairperson shall not share his or her personal views as that of the commission?
Are we talking about in a public meeting or in a non-public meeting?
In a meeting where they might be invited as or speaking, for example, to SLOCOG or EBC. I've been there.
Yeah,
I made it clear that I wasn't speaking for the commission.
Well, maybe that's the word. Could you say the chairperson shall clarify if he or she is sharing their personal views?
I don't see where the. Yeah, I see the provision, but I don't see where it is limited to outside the setting of a council meeting.
Well, here's the example that George mentioned. It was about SLOCOG, and you didn't go as the SLOCOG representative, right, George?
No, I was. I went.
Yeah.
I went to SLOCOG, and this was something that irritated Bob Nimmo so much that he held it against me forever.
Yeah.
That I went to SLOCOG, and I basically said that I was a council member at the time.
Right.
And that the city council, the city of Atascadero, had not made a decision on Highway 41. And they decided, okay, Atascadero, go back and make sure that you come back with a decision in favor of Highway 41. And
but basically you said you were against it, though, right? Yeah, I think so, George.
Well, I think it was, everybody knew it, but.
Oh, yeah, I'd say so. But you make a good point. Is there a way to word that where if you go to a body and you're the representative, let's say that, who is the SLOCOG representative now? Tom?
It's me.
Goes there and the council votes 4-1 and Tom is the one to do something and then he presents it in a negative way. That's not right.
Seems like we need it broader. It's not really related to chairperson. Any council member.
That's right.
Or commissioner should state whether when they
it is
share,
on the council norms already. The council is. Norms has that in there. Yes.
Right. But it's, I don't think it's just a chairperson's role. It's really any council member or commissioner.
I would hate to have this come back to us again. I mean,
why don't we
I would just assume to strike it.
I think if I could just say that I believe that last phrase, while representing the commission, is I think what you were trying to say with this item. Maybe it's not worded clearly, but that while you're representing the council, or in this case the commission, so wherever you are, whether you're at a fundraising event or anywhere where you're there as the representative of the commission, that you need to be clear that what your personal, that you shouldn't give your personal views because people see you as a representative of that body. So maybe it can be worded better
than
it is.
The point is you can give your personal views.
Certainly. As long as you're clear.
As long as you're clear that it's sure. Your personal views and not that of the commission.
I always say that I'm acting as citizen, Jerry Clay, not as, you understand. I try to clear it up that way.
And I think I've got this now.
Okay.
I think what you would need to say, perhaps, is some clarifying language here, and I'm trying to come up with it. It's the sentence we're focused on is the one that says the chairperson shall not share his or her personal views while representing the commission, impliedly at some function other than at a commission meeting, is what I'm getting from this, without disclosing that. So it's not coming to me right away, but I think the concept here is that the commissioner, for example, a chairperson should be able to attend a meeting acting in their, speaking as an individual and not representing the commission and identifying that they are speaking and representing their personal views only.
I suggest since we already have parallel language in the council norms, we let this go and leave it, and next time it comes up, if we have an idea to refine it, or if the attorney has a better way to word that sentence and wants to bring that one item back, I suggest, though, we approve this as a body of
can we approve?
On, or we, because we've, I know we've worked on this a long time now.
Can we approve everything but that one?
Well, I have another one.
Why don't we just strike the last sentence?
Yeah.
And leave it at that.
But the problem is we have it in the council norms, and we are trying to make the commission norms.
Where is it on the council norms?
I'm just looking that up here.
It was on the old council norms. I'm not sure it's on the new ones.
She has her personal views while representing the commission. Well, what's wrong with it, George? I mean, if they say they're representing the commission, they shouldn't. Well, okay.
Right. someone shouldn't go out and say they're representing.
I have something else to add to this, if I could, Your Honor. I think that the sentence, as I've read it over a couple of times now, I think it's clear enough that what the sentence is saying fairly directly now is that when the chairperson is representing the commission, they're not supposed to share their personal views. They're supposed to share the views of the commission. And I think in context now that I've read it and had a chance to focus on it, I think it's clear enough as it is. So I would not suggest any changes to it.
I would agree. Okay, let's move on.
Okay, page 303.
Oh, no.
The last item, commission member discussions will not be redundant.
Oh, Jesus.
We can't even do
that
on our
each commissioner has an opportunity to speak before a motion?
How about we bring up the last election, George?
What do you want to do?
So I don't know how that's enforceable. I mean, if somebody...
You can't.
Why don't we just strike it?
Yeah, strike it.
Free speech. First Amendment. Yeah. Can't you choose to be redundant?
We strike that. I'm okay with that.
Let me say that a different way.
Let's just strike it.
Okay. Let's get a motion, unless we need some public comment.
I'm opposed to striking that.
Really?
Okay, Linda, it'll be 4-1.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Why?
Why?
Actually, okay, it says will not. Okay, I don't know how you enforce that. If you say should not, then I think it's okay.
Yeah, if you want to change it to should not.
Okay, let's do that. It's getting late. I agree.
That's the thing.
Right, yeah.
Okay, should.
Same thing
okay.
with all these norms.
Got that, folks? Should.
Okay. I move approval of the commission norms and procedures as amended.
Second.
Do we need the public to hold
I'm sorry. The public want to speak on this? No.
Thank God.
Close it to the public, bring it back to the council.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, got a motion on the floor.
Your Honor, could I interrupt for just one moment? Mm-hmm. When you say as amended, was there a consensus on should not be redundant?
Yes, I think there was.
All right.
Yeah. We'll find out. Mm-hmm. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is city participation in regional and city-specific tourism study in conjunction with the Economic Vitality Corporation. City Manager Wade McKinney?
Mayor, members of the council, the Economic Vitality Corporation is championing a countywide tourism study, which will also provide an opportunity for cities to participate in individual city-specific studies. We're recommending that we participate both in the countywide study and the individual city study. While we had planned to incorporate tourism in our own economic development analysis, we believe this is an opportunity to more focus our efforts specifically on tourism and by piggybacking, if you will, onto the EVC contract, we're able to get one of the leading experts in California to do the tourism study for the city, Mr. Rabada. Informal discussions with other areas, we believe this is an exceptional advantage and that he will provide a credibility to the tourism study that is very beneficial for these funds. What we would do is take the funds from the economic development study. As we get to the economic development study and we're actually analyzing that budget, if you need additional revenues, we'll make recommendations from the redevelopment budget at that time. The economic development study would still incorporate some tourism issues so as to coordinate this specific tourism study with our economic development efforts citywide. We're recommending that you participate at a level of $2,500 to the countywide EVC and participate in both phases of the tourism study, which would be $12,000 for a city-specific study. We've learned that Pismo Beach is going to participate. They are providing $2,500 to the countywide study, and San Luis Obispo is participating with $5,000 to the countywide study. We have not heard from other cities.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Just to be clear, this will not in any way supersede the economic development strategy that we have on the plate?
No.
All right, thank you.
But this could provide a base kind of amount of information that we could piggyback on as far as that study is concerned, right?
Absolutely, and it is a first step that kind of gets us through the gate.
Okay, great. Anybody?
Sure, I'll just...
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes, and I did review my participation with our new city attorney. There was some question whether or not being the representative on the EVC board and actually serving as the chairperson for the EVC board and the tourism committee, but it's been clarified by our new attorney that any such participation by any of us on respective boards, as long as we're not receiving any direct financial benefit, is not a problem.
Well, let me say this.
I
reviewed your specific situation with regards to being the chair of the EVC, and I found there to be no conflict there. Each case is governed by its own facts, so if any council member should have a question about their involvement with a particular board, they should probably let me know about it, and I can take a look at it. But based on what you told me, I see no conflict on your behalf.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Councilmember Burrell?
I have a question for Wade. We had the RFPs out for our economic visioning. What's our timeline for that to get started versus this? Do you know?
Yes. It is a more complicated answer, I guess. We have reviewed the proposals. We have great proposals. The four most qualified proposals we're going to schedule for interviews. We have been expecting a resubmittal of the Walmart project, which would modify agendas at year end. So we're expecting the economic development strategy an update to you either December 11th or the following council meeting.
And just because I'm getting tired, yeah. When is this study going to be done? Would this be in the next 6 months, in the next year?
The tourism study?
Yeah.
Yes. I think it will be done in the next 6 months. They've had incredible success at collecting the funds. People are, I think, anxious to get it on, and it's an energetic committee at the EVC. So I think this one will move along rapidly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a very broad base that's participated, and we did get quite a bit of notoriety for the wine industry study. It was very well received, and it was by the top researcher in the field in the nation. And likewise, we did extensive research on tourism, and we're getting this is the top person for doing the research, so it is a kind of a bargain component for us, and it'll integrate with all the other cities are doing in our area. And it's a pretty much a blue ribbon committee here locally. We have about 30 folks on our tourism committee, including Noreen Martin Resorts, and our own JP Patel has been involved. And so it's been a good cross section from the county involved on this project. And I think it's a good foundation for us working together in our region on this important topic.
Okay, let me open it to the public. Any member of the public want to speak on this? Mr. Martin. If all of you people who want to speak would line up behind Mr. Martin.
Lord, I think this is a record for me. Steve Martin, I am not here on behalf of Atascadero Main Street this time. I am an independent local marketing consultant and a website developer who has designed websites for various businesses in the North County, including complex database-driven websites. I actually designed two prototypes for the city's tourism website before you paid a consultant to finish that job. I'm a member of the city's Committee on Tourism, and as a member of that committee, I have developed promotional CDs and graphics material industry and Joanne Main of the Chamber of Commerce. It included a general evaluation of the tourism venues in Atascadero, referencing the Destination Development Incorporated report you had already commissioned and paid for. I also did a preliminary SWOT analysis, strategic strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threat analysis for tourism in the city, included general budget projections and potential funding sources, and that was turned back into the council. and I have received no feedback on that to date. As far as the issue in front of you tonight, I support it. I think the city should support it. In addition to that, I think that your own Committee on Tourism should have input into this study. They've been working on tourism, helping you spend your TOT for the last 5 years. I personally would like to be involved because I've invested a lot of my time in this issue for the betterment of Atascadero. And as far as that plan went that I put together, I would really appreciate it if at least a subcommittee of the council would read that, dissect it, and give me some feedback, because there might be some helpful hints there for you. And I realized that it was done without charge, and I apologize for that. But I do hope you support this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Anyone else? Seeing none, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the council. Looking for a motion. Mayor Pro Tem Brenler?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to authorize the city manager to execute agreements with the EVC and the Strategic Marketing Group as discussed, and to approve participation in the EVC countywide study with a contribution of $2,500 appropriated from funds set aside for the economic development strategy.
A second.
Do you want to take them both at the same time?
Is that both one and two?
Yes.
Both one and two? You didn't mention the 12,000, though. Okay.
I said as discussed.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Okay. Yeah. So we got both one and two. Okay. Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Brenler and a second by Councilmember Barreau. Any discussion? I think that as chairman of the EDC, I think you can make sure that the message is sent that the marketing group should speak to Mr. Martin. And
highly recommend that Mr. Martin take the lead for, I think, for our city. He's been involved for some time, and I'd be a good relationship.
Okay.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't give him a little feedback, Tom.
Okay, with that, we'll have a roll call, please.
Councilmember Barreau?
Yes.
Yes. Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenler?
Yes.
And Mayor?
I'm okay with that. I think Steve's worked hard on it.
Okay, let's move on to community forum. Is there anyone in the public who wants to address the council? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council announcements and reports. Any council announcements and reports? Mayor Pro Tem Brenner?
Yes, I just wanted to compliment our police officers and our police department volunteers for the their efforts in the bicycle rodeo this past Saturday. It was wonderful to be there and watch all that youthful enthusiasm as they participated in the education process and the obstacle courses. I was told that there was over 70 children there. And, you know, we can't educate them early enough as far as bicycle safety. And if we prevent one fatality or one serious injury, then that program is worth its weight in gold. So I think I'm safe in speaking for the whole council in telling you, Chief, that a job well done, and pat your employees on the back. They did a great job.
Yeah, please send that message along. That message. Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll move on to committee reports. I have none.
No report.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenler?
No, none.
Councilmember Barreau? Councilmember Clay?
No, none.
Councilmember O'Malley?
None.
Individual determination, City Council? City Clerk?
I do have one thing to say, that regarding David Broadwater's request about Bill Mathis' invoices, and it was a little confusing when you asked for Rochelle to pull those files. She is unable to actually access those tonight. The accounts payable clerk isn't here, and so I will be able to get those tomorrow or in the next day or two, and I can call Mr. Broadwater, and he's welcome to look at those invoices. But you mentioned you wanted it in the record for the minutes tonight. I don't have them to read into the minutes, but I can make copies for all of you if you would like also.
Well, I think the intention was is to make copies and include them with the minutes as an appendix.
With the minutes.
Is that possible?
Next minutes, yeah.
Like at the next meeting, bring them up? Because, I mean, they weren't a part of these minutes. I can't actually attach them to the minutes for tonight.
We can as we referenced them. Or if
it, yeah.
The way I understood it was next minutes.
Okay, attach them to the next minutes.
Okay, you don't want me to give you copies?
I don't need a copy.
Ahead of time.
Anybody need a copy?
You did want.
Yes, I would like them, please.
Thank you, Marcia. City Treasurer, not here. City Attorney?
Yeah, I would just want to say that I'm very excited to be your new City Attorney.
Is that what's going to happen now, Rochelle?
Yes, that is. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. Tonight I wanted to give you a brief update on what's happening with Historic City Hall. Last week we were contacted by OES, which is the State Office of Emergency Services, to let us know that FEMA had completed their project worksheet for the repair of City Hall. You probably are aware from previous discussion, the project worksheet is the funding document for the repairs. It explains exactly what FEMA will include funding for, and that's it. As expected, the project worksheet falls significantly below what we believe it will take to repair City Hall, and so that means that we'll be moving into the appeal process. Now, OES will be forwarding the project worksheet to us in the next couple of weeks. From the day that they forward it to us, we have 60 days to file our appeal. As I discussed in my last update to council, we did expect this. We expected that we'd be far apart. And we've been working ever since probably May or June diligently on the appeal and getting a lot of stuff done over the summer. We have hired Masood Kermani, Inc., who is a FEMA consultant. He is going to help us write the appeal. He has been very successful in obtaining funded needed for FEMA projects in the past. We're really excited to have him on board. That's a good thing. We also had Earth Systems drill some coring samples through the brick and the walls of City Hall. I don't know if any of you have noticed. There's some big holes in the walls of City Hall. And this was done to determine whether the cracks went all the way through all three layers, all three widths of brick. They did, in fact, go through most locations that we did the drilling. The cracks did permeate through all three widths. And while that's not good news for the building, it was what we expected and will substantially help our appeal on the correct repair of those walls. And then we also this summer added Gaynor Engineering to our architectural engineering firm. They specialize in mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and fire safety systems. As we've talked about before, the PW does not include any funding for replacement of the HVAC system. FEMA has indicated, you know, there's repair versus replacement issues, along with some other issues. Gaynor crawled all the way through that building, spent several days going and looking at every unit.
Back in 2003, Barbara Boxer and Bill Thomas were the only two people who came to see the problem. And Bill Thomas was replaced by Kevin McCarthy, so I sent a letter to him. But I did not send a letter to Barbara Boxer, and I think that's something that we should. She's still in office.
George, I have one quick question.
Yeah.
Rochelle, on the cores, you said that you drilled through the brick. Aren't you really meaning you drilled through the cement? Because the brick was just a fascia, right?
No, the brick is actually the lateral system of the building. There are cement columns, and in between the cement columns, there's three layers of brick, and that's your wall. So that it's not through the cement, it's actually through the brick.
So there's actually brick inside the cement, is what you're saying then?
Help me here.
It's the brick face of the building.
Right.
It's three bricks deep, and we were drilling holes in that to see how far the cracks reflected through the bricks.
Okay. I was under the impression it was one brick deep, and it was just a fascia brick or something. So it's three bricks deep. Thank you.
Councilmember Barreau?
So how long does the appeal process take? Estimate, of course.
It does vary. In theory, FEMA has 90 days to respond to our appeal. However, at any point in time, they can request an additional piece of information and restart that 90-day clock. We will be having to move forward probably before the appeal process has run its course, and we'll be moving forward with the construction of City Hall prior to having final funding decisions.
So does that mean we have an estimated start date for this whole thing?
Well, we've been working on it for several years. We are working on construction documents and working on the contract with the architecture firm to get that going. So, right now.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Councilmember O'Malley?
You had said it's going to cost a lot more than we're going to get. What are we estimating it's going to cost, and what are you estimating we're going to, what are they offering at this point?
They are offering $15 million, give or take, $5 million in repairs, which is whatever the bids come in at. They will have to upgrade the elevator due to ADA issues. We found out that we do not have to. So it's kind of a moving target. All I can tell you is there's at least $25 million versus $15 million. The $25 million was in 2004 dollars, so I believe it's larger than that.
It's closer to $30 million now then.
Again, on that $5 million repair figure, the dollar doesn't really matter on that. It's the scope of work. Whatever that costs to do that, FEMA will pick up, and they've committed to it, to those items in that $5 million range. So I'm not as worried about the inflation on that, but the mitigation cap I am.
So if you're going to make a guess today, we're about 10 to 15 million short.
Yeah, don't guess. Don't guess. Nobody has any idea.
That was a nod.
Yeah. Okay, well, that the council will adjourn.
She had one more.
There's another.
You were going to talk about the printer?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Just a quick update on the printery project. Over the summer, we were working with Mr. Gearhart on the submittal of his plans for the restoration and rehabilitation of the printery building. We did review plans in July and August. We didn't have sufficient elevations to complete our review, and we did ask Mr. Gearhart to provide additional elevations of the building. We actually just received those this afternoon, so we do now have a complete package. We're going to be referring those drawings out to our historic consultant for review and comment. I expect that we'll be scheduling a meeting with our steering committee, which is made up of a couple members of the community, to review any comments that come back from the historian. Mr. Gearhart has hired Jones and Stokes to assist his architect in the design process. So the plans have already been reviewed by his historic consultant. So we are hopeful that we can get this process moving at this point.
Thank you. That's it?
Yes.
Okay. Now we'll adjourn. Thank you.